Hello and welcome to Dice Punks, a tabletop role-playing podcast where we focus on playing full campaigns in less well-known systems. This week, the Frontispiece 4 try to catch their breath for once. Hello and welcome. I'm Adam, your friendly neighborhood game master, and joining me are...
Hey, I'm Drew, and I'll be playing Kato, who knows a guy and just recently found out that they might know a dreamer.
Hi, I'm Robin, and I'll be playing Cal Armitage, and this is getting old, but it's still officer to you.
Hi, I'm Dez, and I will be playing Luke Byrne. No, really, Luke Byrne. And I'm now a veteran of soirees.
Delightful. Hello, I'm Nick. I'll be playing Ing, a pacifist android droid operator with a disturbingly high body count.
Normally, this is where I would say thanks, players, but it feels weird to come in on that after the body count comments. So,
No. Thanks, players.
Thanks, Ing.
Let's
I respect your principles, but I'm glad that they're working out the way they are, or maybe aren't.
Let's get right into it with our recap of last time, courtesy this time of
the body count.
The destroyer himself, Ing.
Just another day, I suppose. Another day, another way it could all come crashing down. First, Byrne's personal identity got burnt. And then they were sent a polite invitation to discuss it at an upcoming soiree. Cal and Byrne got into it, each fighting to see who gets to put their lives in greater danger as they wander into the lion's den. Ironically, the only thing that they seem to give each other is disdain, yet they are almost come to blows over who gets to protect the other. The fight is getting old, and frankly, I'm not sure we can afford to keep fighting each other with the walls closing in. Anyway, ended up compromising by both putting themselves in harm's way. They met Haru Hiryu at the soiree, a.k.a. Hahi, who asked Byrne to look into the death of her father, possibly at the hands of the cartel. Haru also introduced Byrne to a hacker named Ali, a.k.a. Reaper, as well as Lulu Sarasti, who was planning on approaching a Professor Kova Levy with a spicy bit of tech. But Lulu was beaten up by three thugs in hollow armor, and the tech was stolen before she got to Kova. Meanwhile, since Cal smuggled my drone Mama into the soiree, Hecate and I were able to listen in from a nearby rooftop cafe. Now I don't have a stomach, let alone taste buds, but the vibes were immaculate, especially since we ended up running into Apatia while we were there. It turns out she's a mutual acquaintance, and on top of that, she intimated that she knows a thing or two about dreamers. That helped us finally put two to two together, and it turns out that the thing that we've had tied down in the frontispiece is a dreamer, whatever that is. Apatia seemed to know more. Said that she'd even seen one before. Now we've got to decide whether or not to trust her enough to swap stories. Well, no, that's not quite right. Hecate and I are far too intrigued by Apatia to avoid going deeper into it with her. The only questions are, when we'll stop trying to tell ourselves that we will be careful, and how, or if, we convince the others to go along with it.
Excellent. Thank you for that recap. We do actually, before we get into it, though, have some more character advancement. We have staggered it out in an unusual way due to the pacing that we have as a result of our chosen medium and time constraints, but we'll go in roll call order here. Drew, how's Kato growing?
I think Cato has realized that that they're playing supporting roles in these missions. So I think I am going to advance in some ways that focus on that. One of the things that I can do as a fixer is actually invoke It Takes All Kinds, which lets me steal something from another class. So I'm going to take the Thief's Mastermind talent, which means that during any mission, when an ally takes an action that involves security level or risk stealth, I may allow them to spend my personal prep as though it were group prep.
Nice.
Excellent.
That seems handy. And then the one other thing that I can do is, of course, grab one of these generic talents. I think along similar lines, I will become the team mom, which means that in purely mechanical terms, I must stress, during prep, the first group prep roll only takes a day. And when I roll, I add one additional group prep to the pool, regardless of the result.
Nice. All right. And Robin, what are we doing with Cal?
So I am going to increase my bounty hunter specialty by one to start with. The other thing I'm going to increase, because I also get a specialty, I'm just going to increase my gun specialty by one, which on my character sheet is my gun go pew pew. Lastly, because it's kind of double dipping, I'm going to select the talent right tool for the right job, which allows me to gain one asset specially with an asset of my choice. The first time that I would spend prep to use an asset while on a mission, I can spend one less prep. With Adam's permission, I am going to take a specialty and the asset of my holographic projection armor.
Excellent. And tactically sound, I think.
Mm-hmm. So now when I use it on a mission, I can spend one less prep on it to activate mm-hmm. it.
Marvelous. Des,
so,
what are we doing with Burn?
I am going to upgrade ghosting and bullshit as my specialties. One hacker, one generic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I am going to take Darknet Rep. Take plus one on all social roles made online when dealing with other hackers or hacker culture. You and your allies can name drop your hacker alias to take plus one on roles made to acquire hacking related assets. This is because I am now a hacker who has threatened a socialite with war.
Indeed.
That does make sense.
And, you know, made some connections with at least a couple other hackers in the scene.
Yeah.
But also threatened a socialite.
All right. Achievement unlocked.
I saw the Dark Souls victory achieved text, but it's socialite threatened. Nick, how is Ing growing?
Yes. Well, I'd like to continue along in the operator profession. And so I will take as my talent miniaturization, which allows me to add one drone tag. For that drone tag, I'd like to check against, you know, your judgment as a GM. I'd like to take passive surveillance, which is illegal.
Mm.
I'm sure that Cato would be proud if I can, in fact, acquire that. So this drone records audiovisual data and Wi-Fi use from nearby electronics and transfers all acquired information to a remote server for later sale or use. The cartel uses the data for harvesting and police use it for illegal surveillance. Private individuals cannot use this. So I guess my rationale is that, you know, story-wise, I'm inspired by data as a weapon or tool based on Burn's recent predicament, but also cognizant of the fact that I have zero income unless I beg Cato for money. So this
unless you beg Cato
to
embezzle from his own establishment again.
Right. Well,
so this is something that I think we can honor as a character advancement choice, but it may sort of
complicate your life later.
Overlap, collide with some of what we are doing early in the session here, which is likely to include some amount of downtime in which you could, you know, both source what you need and construct these systems, as well as perhaps, and this would likely be a necessity in getting this done, but I leave it to Cato to decide, making use of, Cato's recently acquired ability to plausibly deny possession of contraband illegally, to put this all together.
All right.
So makes sense to me. Yeah.
Put it out there as an intention then, and a trap that Ing may be on shortly.
When I was going to say, should we get to the end of our downtime period this session, then you would have it available for like the next big mission. You wouldn't have it for stuff we're doing during that time, but I think we can make it available for the next time it should matter terribly.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. So I'd also like to increase my quick defense, and I'm unsure about my last specialty. I'm tempted to put a third dot into Android Rights Movement, but in my mind, if so, that wouldn't represent power or influence necessarily so much as an entanglement that is an additional plot hook, or a kind of an interest in the android rights rather than necessarily a position of power.
Sure. And if you want to, and it is just if you want to, a way that that could manifest is in how you are spending some of your downtime. So that is an option. All right. Any last thoughts, questions, things to be addressed before we get into it? Very good. So we are going to pick up, sort of reconvening back at the frontispiece after the soiree. Presumably, no sensitive conversations are going to take place on public transit. If there is something that you wish to have done or said while returning to the frontispiece, now is the time to bring it up. Otherwise, we'll pick up with you all returning more or less together to home base, as it were.
We probably do our best to seem not to be going to the same place as we all go to the same place, I would imagine.
Sure. Makes sense. Well, all right. Eventually, you all do arrive at the same place in relatively quick succession. Let's see, it is evening, so just Bronwy and Prolix holding down the fort. Bronwy, when you return, is tinkering with schematics on her little tablet computer. If I remember correctly, there is something sofa-like or bench seating, at least approximate to the storage area in the back of the frontispiece. And she is upside down on this, sort of feet resting on top of the back of it, and head sort of falling off of the edge of the seat, with her tablet computer held out, seemingly rather strenuously, before her eyes, though she does sort of look over and then sit up and right herself as folks come in, and sets the tablet computer aside, welcoming everyone back. Gorster, as usual, is not present when not being actively paid to be present.
This is just.
Well, good evening, Bronwy. I hope that events have been uneventful.
Oh, yes. Nothing much to report, really. Just kind of plugging away at this, of course, a reminder to our players and our listeners, all of this is happening with a backdrop of Prolix's Everbabble, as Drew called it. An evocative turn of phrase, which I appreciate. So at a slightly higher volume than I will be representing with my own personal vocal cords, as well as, over a cavalcade of nonsense. In a synthesized voice, which itself is overlaid over a not unending stream of various cat sounds. So she sort of dismisses the thing that she was doing and says, by the fact that everyone has returned, I assume it went pretty well. I hope.
Cautiously, yes.
Say so.
Oh, good.
Honestly, we haven't had too much of a chance to discuss it, so why cautiously?
I mean, it's still the case that Hahi knew far too much about me. She has said that as a gesture of good faith, she will see to it that information that should be buried is properly buried. We'll see how that pans out.
How good do you think that faith is? Yeah, on a scale of good as gold to we are now at some kind of war.
I think that she earnestly wants to avoid the latter of those.
That's good.
As I made it extremely clear that pretty much those were her options. And I mean, the rest is a matter of trying not to predict the future.
Sure. I mean, we've got some excellent friends, but I'm glad to have one less enemy. Or at least...
likely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Active. Okay. So successful on that score, certainly.
Yes.
Aang and I have a little bit of a development to report as well. We may know what's going on with, and I gesture at the baby. Or, well, to be more exact, I think we met a nun. Hold on, I'm telling this in the wrong order. We may know exactly what kind of creepypasta we're dealing with here.
A nun?
I'm still waiting for the punchline.
No, a dreamer.
What?
I look at Aang as though this makes complete sense and everyone else should be following.
We'll fill you in on where we got the information momentarily, but this apparently is called a dreamer. Still don't know what that means exactly, but we did run into a mutual acquaintance of Kaido and mine. Recent acquaintance, but someone who sometimes dresses as a nun, apparently. But I've also run
seems
into
seems to
it.
Go by nun-related handles on the net as well, and seems very nice and very interesting, and seems to know something about all of this, but also has an uncanny way of showing up where we are. So we thought we'd put to the group whether, well, whether the nun might be an op.
Possibly connected to Caleb Dryden?
I don't want to believe it, but it's definitely not impossible.
Say more about this nun. Also, what handles?
Starless Nun, specifically.
Is that one I'm familiar with, Adam?
No.
Okay.
Bronwy also just shrugs her shoulders and... I would assume that I'd have heard about somebody who went around dressed as a nun, but it's the first time hearing of it.
Starless Nun seems to be their handle on the public net. Could be something else for the spicier stuff.
I ping K&B about this, you know, actively while we're in the middle of talking.
Okay. No immediate response. Whatever, I guess unless it's via email, it would show a, like, AFK status. But, you know, inbox open, so to speak, message has been received.
Yep.
Chasing dreamers. That was a turn of phrase she used a couple of times. I think it's an idiom, but I also think maybe it's not an idiom.
She claims to have run into a dreamer herself, a different one from the sounds of things.
I pull out one of those classic flip notebooks and start to jot down notes.
Yay!
Cop gonna cop.
The law and order chung chung in the background.
Sunglasses suddenly appear on my face.
I was gonna say it is now my headcanon that when Cal gets a text message or an email or whatever, the notification sound on their phone is the Law and Order. Chung chung.
I am comfortable with this. This does have Cal energy.
It does. Big Cal energy.
So Bronwy is looking consideringly at the baby and sort of just says, okay, this is getting... I understand why we wouldn't want to, but what are our thoughts about just using some of Gorister's welding tools to take this thing apart or melt it down to slag and just kind of get totally rid of it. When it was a creepypasta, it was weird and ominous, but now there's like a designation for this kind of thing. And I mean, well, look at the tech, right? It's someone somewhere is going to come for it. Right?
Probably.
Right.
Almost certainly.
Someone already has.
She points at Ing. Right. So, nothing exactly happened, but I thought you'd be interested to know that PSS has officially deployed their IMX security drones. I saw one pass by the front of the shop earlier. They're on patrol.
Dreadful.
Yeah. The one I saw anyway is one of those little dog-looking things. It's got sort of like a street view camera on a antenna coming off the top of it. Kind of a nightmare. It was playing an Augvert as it went past.
Midway between Fahrenheit 451 and Boston Dynamics.
I'll admit to only knowing the Boston Dynamics part of that. I was supposed to read Fahrenheit 451 in high school, but I didn't.
We have a paper copy, funny enough.
She goes, maybe I'll have to buy that next time I have spare reading time. And she gives a significant glance at Prolix, who is making a series of atonal yowling noises while sort of looking from person to person.
It's the kind of book that people think it's real funny in an art project to set on fire. It is temptingly flammable, but we're kind of getting off topic here, I think. So, all those bots are bastards. On this, we can agree. We should be extra careful. As far as melting the baby down to slag, a phrase I have to admit I didn't think would be coming out of my mouth anytime soon, is that physically possible? Do I know if that's physically possible using Gorister's tools?
You
maybe physically possible, don't. Period, but given what we have on hand.
You may not. Taking in your specialties, but Ing might know. Ing, would you roll me clever plus robotics?
So that's 9 on the dice. Robotics is 3. Clever, I think, is also 3. So 9 plus 6, 15.
Okay. You're pretty sure that many of the components would be meltable with a simple oxygen acetylene torch. Maybe not the whole thing, but significant progress toward utterly destroying it and completion of the process of fully disassembling it would be the work of a couple days.
It'd be a major project. It could be accomplished in a few days. But also, it didn't react so well to even being turned on. And as far as I know, we didn't find an off button other than shooting it.
And even that took a lot of presses of the button, as it were.
And without knowing what it is, we don't even know if it's sentient.
Oh, I was putting aside ethical questions for the moment. That was the next topic. Mm-hmm. Having a thing that might fight back be alive while we take it apart for several days seems less than ideal, even if we are able to sleep at night afterwards. But your point is well taken. It could be sentient. It could be more sentient than we are. We don't know.
I mean,
it could be a them, and I don't mean in the alternative pronoun sense. I mean, how do we even know there's only one consciousness in there if we know that there's consciousness in there? We don't know anything.
I was on board with taking the damn thing apart until that came up.
This could be a culture, like a bowl of yeast. We don't know.
I look at Ing.
Bronwy says 3.1415 with the tonality of, well, fuck.
That doesn't mean no, it just means we need more information, I think.
No, I mean, you're like I said, your points are well taken. I'd rather talk to it than disassemble it. But I think the point is also well taken that we can't keep going the way we're going, or someone is going to descend on us with something we can't defend against to, I don't know, to do whatever it is they want to do with this thing.
The dragnet is closing.
That was a very cop way of putting that, but yes, agreed.
Seems like we need answers soon. Because you're right, Bronwy, we can't just keep sitting on this.
So the question is, do we roll the dice with the nun?
Yes.
It's the only lead we've got. Not just the best, but the only.
Slight correction. It was mentioned last time, so I don't feel like it is the voice of God speaking into your mind.
Listen, Caleb Dryden, boy.
Mm-hmm. Also,
yeah, that's true.
You don't have incredibly convenient contact information, but also, like, he has sought you out before.
That's mm-hmm. a good point. Yeah, in fact, I do. I think in character, I correct myself. I say, well, there's Dryden.
But, I mean, this is the only option that's made an offer. Which, if someone wants to argue that that's suspicious, I don't know that I can disagree.
Oh, it's incredibly suspicious, but it is the only offer we have that's not past due addresses.
Yeah, well said.
I look over to Matchstick. Consensus?
I mean, in the absence of good choices.
That does seem to be the order of the day, yeah.
Bronwy finally tears her gaze away from the baby and says, "Well, all else aside, I feel like I really do need to meet this person. Because, well, she sounds very unusual. I hope she doesn't have a problem with witchcraft."
I cannot think of a person whose vibe is less that they would have a problem with witchcraft.
That's a relief.
Well.
All right, then.
So it is... if you were to eat dinner now, it would be a late dinner on the evening of Monday, January the 20th. Are we immediately contacting Apatia? If so, I assume it is going to be Cato who does so, having been given her contact information, her business card. Or are we, setting a different time? And if so, when?
Yeah, I'll put it to the group, brief table talk. Do we want to get the show on the road, or are things probably too hot tonight, given that crimes were just, in the air?
Mm. I think press ahead, mm-hmm. As much as I would like the downtime to kind of consolidate stuff and do things, I think in story it makes the most sense to actually just kind of contact Apatia.
Mm-hmm. Agreed on
that. Let's do it. I send her a message. I say, so
interested in catching a dreamer?
Then I delete that and I say, "Hey, how's it going?"
You up?
God damn it.
So, okay. So what you sent was, "How's it going?"
Yeah. And then maybe I follow that with, "Been thinking."
Mm. I said, "You dreamer picks. Please respond."
So you send "how's it going?" And while you are entering in, "been thinking," she responds with all capitals A/S/L ? And then with, "Oops, sorry, wrong window."
I say, "It happens. Wanted to discuss the chase."
realize that saying dreamer over know, who knows how secure comms is probably not the best idea.
You get a fairly protracted little like is typing thing, followed by the message that you get after all of this is actually not that long. It just says, "Do you know the place of honor?" This does not mean anything to you.
I put to the group whether it means anything to them.
Does it?
It's like a nuclear silo reference. What's
every
going on here?
Everybody present has only heard this phrase in that context that Kato just brought up, if at all. But if Burn doesn't, then Bronwy will just run a quick search.
Yep.
Either or. And it turns out to be a bar and grill in Mariposa Ward.
Mm. I respond, Mariposa?
She sends a little, I don't know about everybody else, but in various programs and apps and things, emoticons these days are increasingly animated. And she sends one of those, but done up kind of in the style of like an AOL user icon, those little animated ones of, you know, the little yellow man with the white head, like crossing his arms and nodding. It is generously like 50 by 50 pixels.
I love this.
It's perfect. So then I say, all right. 32/ it's complicated / meet you there soon.
So it's just like a full on movie gif of something you've never seen before, but a character with a very bad haircut and a cringily goofy expression doing finger guns.
Yeah.
I really do enjoy this person way too much to be sensible, but she's willing to meet.
Bronwy goes, so probably not a whole gang kind of thing that would probably draw a lot of attention.
Might be a bad way to start, yeah.
All right. Well, I guess she looks at Prolix and sighs. I guess I have work to do that can be done here, so I can hold down the fort and, you know, you can go to your meeting and everybody else can do what they need to, I suppose.
I would like to come.
Hey, Yushi knows. Okay. This is out of concern, suspicion, curiosity.
Yes.
Anger.
No. The others, though.
Okay. I ask, mind if I bring a couple friends?
She responds, as long as they're interesting, then with a winky emoticon.
Do I know how to do the little pixel people that she's doing?
It is genuinely just her embedding GIFs.
Okay. Rather than spend time figuring out how to embed GIFs, I send terrible ASCII art of some symbol that means I promise, and then at the bottom, I lose confidence that that means anything and say, yeah, I promise they're interesting.
She sends three little red heart emoji back.
Okay. Well, not a group thing, but I think Ing, who she's already met, and Burn, who insists, we've got a merry band.
That does, I suppose, leave Cal with time on their hands. What would you like to be doing while this goes on?
Oh, I figured I'd be tagging along where they're was invited.
If you're not intentionally sitting out.
No, I'm not.
Totally fine.
No, I don't think I qualify as interesting. Thankfully, I am not aware that this was the standard.
Sure. I hadn't heard anything.
I hadn't said that was, I crafted that line badly, but no, I figure we're all going.
Sure. Yeah. We'll all head out there together, minus Bronwy, who will hold down the fort. Mariposa Ward is not, close by, but it's not as far afield as you were earlier. And it is past the busiest time on transit, so it won't take eons to get there. At a glance, the place of honor is not just a bar and grill. It is a themed bar and grill. The theme is Civil Defense era.
God damn it.
Which at the very least means it is unlikely to have anything approaching a dress code. So, you know, you can pretty much go as you are. And in, let's say, 45 minutes to an hour, you all are arriving at the nearest station and able to, you know, track it down. Is there anything in particular you wish to do or discuss in transit?
Deciding how much or how little we're going to say. That might have to be a game time decision, but...
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point we more or less lay it out. We don't have to disclose unrelated problems that we have, but everything to do with the baby. I guess we don't necessarily have to say how we came by this member of the family either.
We've got the location that it's currently being stored at until we've sussed out whether we want to bring her.
That seems like an extremely good thing not to mention, yeah.
I would advise against laying it all out. I would feed it piecemeal, kind of like a hand of poker.
Yep.
I unconsciously nod an approval in Burn's direction, but then pretend like it did not happen.
I should glance between the two of you to let you know that I saw that, but then I politely pretend not to have from there forward. All right. We play it close to the chest, but we can't keep all of the cards hidden, right? We're not going to get anywhere if we don't share something. So we stick to the behavior we've observed, the nature of the thing. That seems to be what she's interested in anyway.
And hopefully we can learn more about what dreamers are and learn more about what she saw.
That'd be great.
Yes.
Yeah.
Think of it as a quid pro quo going into it. She extends information, you respond in kind. Keep an ace in your sleeve.
All right.
She may still have an angle, but maybe she's just
everyone's
curious.
Got an angle. We've got fucking angles aplenty.
You sound like me.
I makes for the listener's benefit a gesture of, well, a fucking course I do.
No. Yeah, it was the international no-shit Sherlock gesture. Yeah,
yeah, like, we're not quite at, of course, Dad, but that's also an elephant in the room.
Indeed.
Indeed, Papa.
What the fuck, Adam?
Unbidden, a shiver runs down Kato's somewhat mechanical spine.
I was gonna say, it is entirely possible that, in a technical sense, Kato does have the most physical angles. Out of the group.
Yeah, that's probably numerically correct.
Because my understanding is that your cybernetic arms are not like fully encased. You know, they have some of the machinery sort of like exposed, which involves a lot of angles.
Indeed. Yeah, no, totally. And they're built for function as opposed to blending in. Because with the size differential, they were never going to blend in anyway.
Right. And also fuck blending in.
Mm-hmm. That's also philosophically correct. Yeah,
indeed.
Angle, if you will.
So in due time, you arrive at the nearest station in Mariposa Ward to the place of honor and make your way to it. It is quite evident as the exterior is done up in sort of above ground nuclear bunker aesthetics. It's not especially coherent, but it has sort of the visual signifiers, you know, and the signage is done up like, you know, warnings of the period. And there is a little hinge board signs outside with what appears to be hand lettered announcement on the side facing you in the style of like a World War II era propaganda poster that advertises that the Fruits of Knowledge are playing tonight. And indeed, you can hear some raucous sounding music coming from the somewhat incongruously propped open door that is made to look like, you know, sort of a submarine bulkhead door. It is not empty, but lightly attended, and Apatia is not yet in evidence. This does give you time to note the interior decor, which is somewhere between, you know, like military mess hall, fallout vault, and like a Chili's. There is a bar being tended by someone who, well, could be anywhere from a little older than Burn, but extremely sleep deprived, to a little younger than Kato, and maybe not extremely sleep deprived, but habitually sleep deprived. He's, you know, just kind of like short, messy hair and a somewhat stained button-up shirt. Looks just permanently rumpled, and as though if he could not lean on the bar, he would fall over. There are a handful of guests sitting at the tables, and another handful bopping along to the music. The stage, when you come in, is to your right. It is a cleared out space of floor with some kind of risers supporting a modular sort of stage. The risers are about 5 inches tall. It is not a dramatic stage, and crammed onto it are 5 extremely flamboyantly dressed people. With wigs and feather boas and fun genderfuck outfits. The lead singer has what appears to be a sex toy strapped to their forehead, like a unicorn horn. It is painted decoratively, and they are alternately aggro shouting and melodically singing in a somewhat like kind of alto register. It is difficult given the acoustics of the place to make out any of the lyrics, but they are going for it.
I say mostly to Aang, but to the whole group, and probably louder than I mean to so that I can be heard. Vibes!
Definite vibes.
It appears to be seat yourself, and as you are making your way to whichever suitably sized table or booth you have chosen, the song being played ends, and the front person for the Fruits of Knowledge says in a slightly worn out sounding voice, you know, "All right, you've been great. We're going to play the rest of our set after a quick break here. This is the kind of music that requires some routine hydration. So we'll be back. Stay gay." And they exit the stage and file kind of along the wall into what you presume is kind of the kitchen area. It doesn't seem to really have like a green room per se.
Stay gay, get hydrated.
Drummer who still has their sticks, who has their face painted up in NB flag colors, just clacks the sticks over their head twice at you.
I'd like to send my swarm outside of the restaurant and with instructions for counter surveillance. Okay. To give us a heads up or a warning if people are gathering in a way that might be concerning. And since they are a smart drum, they do have some basic AI.
Yeah.
if this is a definite trap slash ambush, then that way we'll have some advance notice. Mm-hmm.
Right. Sure. Would you be so kind as to give me a robotics roll, please?
Yes.
Clever.
Just the clever and robotics. So that's plus six and it is 12 plus six.
Is 18. Dang. All right then.
It's a bit of a retcon, but knowing that there were IMX surveillance drones out and about, I likely activated my holographic projection armor.
Was that like upon leaving the
frontispiece? Before arriving. Probably not upon leaving the frontispiece because it's part of my usual.
Well, so the IMX drones are in PSS's employ. You are several wards away.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Excellent. Yeah. Then, yeah, that would have been upon leaving the frontispiece.
Okay. And so you've left it active kind of the whole time? Okay.
Yeah.
Good to know. Not a problem to retcon. Drones are out doing counter surveillance. Cal's holographic projection armor is going. You all are seated, and shortly the bartender trudges over, and you notice as he gets close enough, the name tag that he has on just reads Mediocritus in sort of like faux Roman all caps. And he says in just a very sort of draggled voice, "Get you something to drink, folks? Or eat, I guess. You usually take drink orders first, but who cares?
I'll have a tonic and lime."
All right.
Make what you feel like making.
He blinks and goes, "Okay, sure."
I mean, if that's too much of a burden, then tonic works fine.
We've got a cocktail called a burden. I can bring it to you.
That sounds like fate. I'll have a burden, a tremendous one.
What kind of energy drinks do you have?
He looks at you and goes, "Don't usually have them like on the menu, but I do keep a stash below the counter." He names a brand that would be roughly the equivalent of like the Mountain Dew energy drinks that you can get nowadays.
That works. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Nods and trudges back to the bar and gets to work. As the folks who are by the stage find seats and conversation kind of picks up in the set break, Ing, you'll notice your drones letting you know that Apatia is inbound. She is sort of walking with an air of confidence down the street toward the place of honor.
Recognizing now that I pronounced your name wrong during the entire
I actually intro. Think it's a great interaction with the Australian accent.
Mm-hmm. Fair.
Yeah, I thought it was intentional.
I thought it was in character.
Especially thing. With the yeah, bad same. One.
I mean, there's also that, yes.
In world put in as a joke by someone.
Exactly. Yeah, someone.
It's a lampshade on a lampshade.
Yeah, I definitely assumed that it was a deliberate choice. So, in any case, you see her coming. In due course, she enters, sort of scans around the place a little bit, sees, Ing and Kato in particular at the table and starts walking over with a smile on, looking unconcerned. For those of you who in character have not seen her yet, yes?
If I may interrupt slightly before, did Canby ever get back to me?
Not yet. It has not been all that long, but not yet.
Well, not only just for flavor that I do waver over whether it's necessary or not and make my customary check to see if the large arm that's waving is scraping the ceiling.
It is not. This has relatively high ceilings. Apacia waves back and makes her way over. Those of you who have not in character seen her before, just as a reminder, are seeing a woman of relatively slight build, young, probably not that much older than Burn's actual age, but
wild,
not a no longer a child, but
still
is
a kid.
Hey.
It is obscured a little bit in the estimation because her head and neck are extensively augmented in a way that looks kind of, I think the word I used last time was like concerning. It just, not the result of, master plan professionally implemented. She's got, some chrome teeth with sharpened canines and augmented eyes, as well as all of the stuff on the back of her head and neck. She has short dark hair, not currently covered by a wimple, but is otherwise wearing what does appear to be a sort of parody of a nun's habit. In a dark night sky blue with silvery LED sort of pinprick lights dusted over it. And she strides over smiling and joins you at your table, waving to Cal and Burn, and says, "Good evening. I am Apacia. Nice to meet you. And nice to see the two of you again, and so soon."
"Yeah, thanks for coming. And firmly promise everyone here is interesting in one way or another."
She nods. "Oh, I firmly believe you. I hope you don't mind the choice of venue. It's one of the relatively few places that I can be sure doesn't have any active surveillance."
It's
I turn
charming.
I turn to Cato and just say, "I approve of this one."
She grins. She says, "You've been thinking." "Me too."
"Yeah.
I never stop, really."
"Yeah, it's a gift and a curse. I hear you. Specifically about dreamers. I guess I wanted to compare notes."
She kind of gives you a smirk and says, "Well, I don't write any of this stuff down."
Purely metaphorically. "I actually wouldn't want it written down. That's prudent, smart."
She nods.
"Wise. You said it's been a long time since you've encountered one. My own experience, and I brought some friends because mine intersects with theirs. My own experience is more recent. I think there's one on Grand Cross, at least one, more or less as we speak."
She nods. She says, "Okay, well, so basic background then. Let's get you caught up. Dreamers are a Grand Cross phenomenon, as far as I know. Nothing like them has ever been reported on other stations or on Luna. Earth, well, bigger place, harder to parse. Who knows? But they seem to be unique here, and the earliest sort of, posts using the name date back 4 or 5 years, maybe some conjectural descriptions beforehand. The only thing it really takes to get something designated a dreamer in the, spaces that talk about them is that it is a seemingly unique piece of unaccounted for technology. And typically, if you find something weird, but it is inert or purely robotic in its behavior as well as in its construction, and especially if it is not hostile, these are things that typically take it out of the dreamer category.
Those are the things that dreamers typically have in common. They are active, mobile, and seem to display decision-making capacities of some kind. And then, of course, they are...
And also, they don't like you.
Yes. You know, they're not examples of known public publicly known technology, and no one has yet, as far as I know, reported a fully peaceful encounter. There have been times when, you know, the dreamers, if that is what they were in these cases, simply retreat or hide or do something seemingly arbitrary, but attempts to get particularly close to them are, in almost all of the accounts, met with hostility. I am not the world's most analytical thinker all of the time, but one of the things that has occurred to me is that it's hard to separate actual accounts from storytelling tropes. These are phenomena that people, you know, don't take very seriously a lot of the time, and so a lot of what's out there on them is just storytelling. And so it's hard to say for sure that the unfriendliness is, or any other aspect of them for that matter, is a fact, when it could just be what makes the story interesting. That's more or less the way that discussions on them tend to work. There are people who are aware of them who think that it's just urban legends, and then there are people who are aware of them who are actively attempting to find or explain them or warn others about them. I think that's the basics. There's no consensus on how many there are, but the general agreement is that they are mostly unique. There's, you know, a limited cast, though at times they are sometimes in the stories accompanied by other devices, other drones, perhaps.
Are they sentient or connected to one another somehow?
That's not easy to answer. I don't think anybody could with confidence. Certainly not me. It's possible. It could be that it's true in some cases. It could be that it's true in no cases. It could be that it's true in all cases.
And also, what is sentiment or sentience at a certain point?
She looks at you and smiles in a way that exposes her sharpened chrome canines and says, "That's the question, isn't it?" But in a functional way, in order for the online communities to consider something a dreamer, it has to act under its own power in a decision-making capacity. So that implies at least an animal level of stimulus response, so some level of sentience and some level of sapience, but it's impossible to know with any certainty what level.
And if history from back on Earth teaches us anything about this particular line of inquiry, it's that when humans think they're encountering animals that are hostile or evil, it's almost always the human's fault.
She nods and says, "That is probably true. The difference is that, as far as I'm aware, humans didn't create wolves or snakes. I'm pretty sure that humans have to have created the dreamers, and so it may or may not be the human whose presence fault, even if it is a human's fault."
That's a fair distinction. We tried to uncreate wolves, I guess.
Yeah, we got dogs.
Fair degree of success.
Have you heard these dreamers associated with anyone by the name of Canopus?
She sort of cocks her head and says, "Canopus, Canopus, Canopus." Someone posts on the forum, at least one of them, with a name that has Canopus in it. He's a little bit of a crackpot, I think. And then she sort of pauses and goes, "Well, if that's not the crackpot calling the kettle black." But I don't
know much or anything about them specifically could be related, perhaps.
Where could these forms be found?
She was, I can provide you with a short list, but do know that they get taken down a lot or move around a lot. It's the sort of thing where if there are too many posts about too many dreamers in a place, tends to either disappear, or if it's a smaller community, get erased from the web entirely. So people try to start threads about it on larger forums and in larger discussion groups to sort of mask its presence. Moderators sometimes don't like that. Other times, who knows what happens. All of which is to say, I've got a handful that I can share with you, but I can't guarantee how long they'll be valid for. You kind of have to put in some time to, you know, sift it out. Though it helps to be plugged in to the existing community. People will forward you new links when they have to move hosts or something.
That would be lovely. And,
she begins to sort of like flick her eyes back and forth in a way that tells you that her augmented eyes are doing browsing and or communication. And sure enough, in about a minute, I guess, Kato, you're the one that she has contact information for. She has sent a plain text file with a password encryption on it to you that will contain a few URLs that have the texture of like an Angel Fire page. Yes. Or a paste bin, or like a dot horse TLD.
Good pull. I forward it to the group. And I say, thanks for that. And for this,
I will,
I guess the hard part.
Use that information to send Apatia a sort of digital, hi there.
All right.
By my hacker name.
Mm-hmm. While all this is being shared around, Mediocritus comes back.
What a name, Adam.
With a wooden tray with drinks on it. He somewhat ceremoniously puts a can of energy drink in front of Burn and pops it open, and then gives Cal their tonic drink and Kato their... It is a one of those sort of like curved pint glasses that's a little like bulbous at the top that you like used to get like Coca-Cola from like a soda fountain in. And it is served lightly chilled, no ice, no garnish, and it appears to just be like a dark liquid inside the glass that brings to mind the word sludge. It's probably not actually that thick in texture, but it kind of like gives off vibes.
I slosh it around to the degree that sludge can be sloshed and say, burdensome. Thanks. Yeah.
It is a little less viscous than it at first appears, but it is clear that at least one of the elements that went into it has sort of like an oil base. It doesn't smell enough for it to be like essential oils, but kind of that overall texture that kind of gives it more of a sludgy vibe.
I find myself thinking about how I have yet to replace my bio stomach with an android one that can detect hazardous materials, but figure, what the hell.
He gives kind of a glum nod and he says, folks want any food?
Could I actually get a glass, opaque, ideally, for my friend here? And I jerk my chin in Ing's direction.
He sort of looks and goes, yeah, I can do that. Anything else? He turns his attention to Apatia and goes, oh, didn't see you come in. I'll be back with your drink. And I guess at that point, if you want anything to eat, just let me know. And he tucks his tray under his arm as though it weighs 1,000 pounds and trudges back to the bar to make Apatia's drink.
A regular here, I take it.
She nods and she says, like I said, public place so that I can be assured of no surveillance, and the acoustics are so terrible that probably no one can understand what we're saying from 10 feet away. Though I wouldn't take that to the bank.
Sure. Still, worth its weight in gold.
How does a burden taste?
Astringent is sort of the main thing, though it has perhaps appropriately a lingering aftertaste that is a little sweet but a lot bitter. It's you don't hate it, but this is a lot of it.
Mm-hmm. So it's a sipping drink.
It's probably not my kind of drink in real life, albeit in an extreme form.
Yeah, it sounds complex.
I've been read for filth, and I accept it willingly.
So, thanks again. I think the tough part is just separating fact from fiction. So, I mean, maybe we talk about our own experiences, assuming we can all trust each other enough to share, you know, at least the truth as we're able to understand it.
She nods and she says, no, that sounds great. If it's all the same to you, I'd love it if you would go first in the experience sharing, because, well, on the one hand, I'm more likely to have relevant information on your experience than you are on mine. And, well, if I'm being honest, mine is kind of personal, so the show of trust would, you know, not that I distrust you, but it would be nice.
It's fair enough.
Excellent. She looks like she's about to say something and her mouth sort of like opens and then her expression freezes somewhat unnaturally. And Ing, you may not be the only one to notice, but you're certainly the first to notice that her augmented eyes, the like irising focal element, jutters in a way that can't be intentional. And she just sort of stops. She stares sort of directly through the space between Cal and Burn.
Pause. You're right.
No immediate response. She's like still breathing.
I look at Ing.
Is there anything that I either know about this or any equipment that, you know, like, was she hacked, for lack of better terms?
That seems unlikely from what you know. Let's get a clever roll from you, Ing. So that's just 2d6 plus 3.
So that's 13 total.
All right. This has never happened to you or to anyone around you before, but it is something that androids occasionally talk about. This looks for all the world like her augments have had some kind of runtime error. This is extremely rare, but can happen to androids when they like don't go into their maintenance cycle for like a really long time. Around about the time you sort of conclude that that might be what you're looking at, her optical augments sort of like snap closed, open, closed, and then sort of, you know, dilate back to where they were before, and her mouth snaps shut and she sort of looks around a little wildly at where she is and at you. And
welcome back. You're safe. At least as safe as you were a few moments ago. You're spaced out for a moment there.
And she sort of focuses in on you. She says, thanks. And looks around the table and goes, right. I was on my way to meet, well, I guess all of you. And around this point, Mediocritus brings her drink. It is in a wine glass and is like bright Christmas icing red and faintly bubbly. And he sort of puts it down. He goes, anything to eat or no? All right. And it just doesn't really wait for a response before walking off.
I hold my hand up to request the opaque glass for Ing, but clearly
he goes, oh, And he goes, what is probably hurrying for him, and grabs that. It's like beaten tin, and brings it back and puts it down and goes, yeah, sorry about that. Just, you know, let me know if there's anything else you want. Enjoy. And then he heads on back to the bar. While he is traveling, the digital clock on the wall behind the bar gets to the hour, call it 9, and there is a brief klaxon sound as the clock arrives at the hour, goes, and everybody goes,
that's a klaxon?
Everybody in the, it's the best I can do on my microphone.
Okay, fair, fair. Just wanted to, like, be sure that that noise, which sounds more like dive bombing kitten.
I mean, fair enough. I didn't want to blow out my recording.
Yeah. No. Go ahead.
Yeah. My point is, it is a falling sound and relatively abrupt, but quite loud. And everybody in the place, including Mediocritus, goes and sort of like jumps. I suppose, Ing, it is up to you whether that is a feature of your nervous system or not. but most people sort of like jolt and then carry on with what they were doing.
Yeah, I'll say a violent start from Ing. A little excessive, in fact. But doesn't say anything.
Yeah. Apatia, in the meantime, seems to have gathered her thoughts, and she is, in a low voice, narrating, so I got here and we started talking and I told you some of what I know about dreamers, and she looks at the drink and says, and we talked to Mediocritus. Okay. Yes. Do carry on. Sorry. That's very embarrassing.
Are you okay?
You don't need to apologize or be embarrassed, yeah.
Oh, no, I'm fine. I just, and she sort of seems to involuntarily reach a hand up toward the augments on the back of her head and neck and then stops and pretends like she was adjusting the collar of her outfit and says, just a little distractible sometimes, you know how it is. Where were we? Where were you?
I do know how it is. One needs to take time.
I'm good at taking my time.
All right. So we were about to make a bit of a show of good faith and tell you a little bit about our encounters. Looks right, around at the group. Physical description?
Circumstances of the initial meet, I think.
Oh, okay. Diving into a bit of a deeper end there, but
test of environmental knowledge. You may have heard, depending on where and how you're connected digitally, about a sale recently of exciting unknown tech that was kept dreadfully insecure.
She smirks a little at that and just nods.
Even the fact of the invitation was broadcast well beyond its at least initial ambit. Many who might not have been intended to attend the event, namely an auction on the tech.
She jumps in and she says, no, someone auctioned off a dreamer?
Tried to.
They tried.
They
she
didn't go well.
Offered
literally like folds her hands in front of her on the table in like a prayer position and goes, Lord, protect us. That is some of the stupidest bullshit I've ever heard.
that is an accurate assessment of the intelligence of the operators involved, although it's unclear who was operating them, as they...
They might have been useful idiots as opposed to just the regular kind.
Oh, they were clearly useful idiots.
I point at Burn.
Nods. So, she sort of looks considering, we can perhaps elide, if my assumptions are correct, the next bit, but you encountered one of them, and what was it like?
It took
unpleasant.
Us, well, yes, that. it took us some time to determine its name based on digital research, but I'll just nod at this point to Cal, who was actually there for it.
It kept repeating pi.
Over three.
You're familiar.
I am. It has a polyhedron with some sort of prehensile arms that can extend from it. It has some weapon-like functions with, at least according to reports.
I would classify those as weapons.
Yeah, the reports are correct on that score.
She nods. Oh, this is exciting. I've never spoken to eyewitnesses of Over-3, which is frustrating because it is arguably the... Well, it's certainly not the most commonly referenced, but my smell tests of various stories suggest it might be the most commonly encountered of the major dreamers. So, if that's correct, and if I'm correct, then what it sounds like is one of those who encountered it maybe subdued it and then decided that the best thing to do with it would be to sell it? Sell it? At an auction?
Well, unclear degree of subdue. It was inactive until the useful idiots decided to put on a demonstration as a show of good faith of what the merch was.
Oh, good Lord preserve us.
In a room full of people intending to bid.
She nods. She goes, of course, okay. Moving beyond their abject idiocy, so how did your encounter resolve? You don't seem dead.
As far as I can tell, we're not.
Definitely not dead.
Small arms fire in the general vicinity.
She cocks her head like a dog in the presence of a guitar being plucked.
You hang out with a cop enough, you start talking like a police report. That's the problem.
I assume that all of our chores are discussed in a similar fashion.
Yes.
Oof. She goes, so you disabled it.
Someone disabled it.
Temporarily.
It always seems to be. And then what?
I have a question for you.
To be temporarily disabled.
Would you happen to know about... I will describe our ferretly intruder.
She furrows a brow and she goes, interesting. It sounds like a kitbash. They're almost all built on that scale. No one that I've seen knows where they come from or exactly what they do. There are theories out there that I've discounted until now that their activity is linked to the dreamers, but it always seemed too pat, too neat to be true. I haven't encountered many kitbashes myself, but the description is pretty consistent. The details change, but the size, overall construction, and strangeness of them are consistent. And there are those who claim that you can predict the appearance of a dreamer by kitbash activity. This has never been conclusively proven or disproven because, well, kitbash activity is almost impossible to track. They're not seen very much, and they're unobtrusive. And they mostly operate in the infrastructure, so even if you have sophisticated sensing equipment, it's going to be complicated by rodents and people and other less mysterious devices that keep the station running. So, interesting, though.
That aligns with what we've heard. Specifically, more appearances of these kitpashes following our encounter with Over 3.
Yeah, the causality is sort of reversed, but the correlation is strong.
Once it was subdued, somebody made off with it, and it seems like there's been a bit of a hunt to track down whatever it is.
This screamer, I can imagine ever since. So.
There appears to be possibly some amount of cartel involvement.
She nods and she says, I can't prove anything. It is pretty much just a gut feeling, but my feeling is that the reason why information about the Dreamers is so impermanent and unreliable is due to cartel interference. And there are a number of possible explanations for that, but, you know, it would be odd for these things to exist on this station and not at least have the cartel's attention. And I find it likely that they are involved somehow, but I couldn't tell you really how that would be.
That seems logical, yes. Is this enough of an informational outlay to sort of start a reciprocation?
My working theory is that they plan to weaponize them.
The patient nods and she says, that could very well be the case. My understanding is that Over 3 is, well, easily provoked, and so it would make sense to want to use it as a weapon. And so I was wanting to get Cal's contribution before we move on, she does indicate that, yes, no, I appreciate your information, and anything further that you decide to trust me with is certainly welcome, but it's probably high time that I... She sort of chuckles to herself and poses a little grandiosely in her chair, and she says, gave you my origin story, and then sort of chuckles and leans over the table a little bit, taking a generous sip of the red, lightly fizzy drink in her wine glass. It does color her lips somewhat redder, which is a fun effect. I don't know if I had particularly mentioned it before, but this iteration of Apatia is quite pale, you know, as there is a tendency to wanness among people who live on Grand Cross for a while, who don't make a point of it to sort of get outdoor sunlight. So she launches into her tale. She's pretty dramatic about it. She says, so I didn't realize it at the time, but my parents were in a cult, and this cult orchestrated to get a decent number of their members. It wasn't a big cult, but a decent number of their members tickets crossing to Grand Cross. The idea was that they could make a bid for being, you know, more important as a religion here in sort of an entirely new orbital society than they would have been able to be back on Earth, where they were just a relatively anonymous and unremarkable offshoot of, well, mystical, fundamentalist, charismatic Christianity. If you have ever heard of the Quiverful movement, they're not dead center of that, but it's a decent approximation. Ugh. So
it couldn't have been easy, I'm sorry.
Well, it certainly wasn't, but that's not specifically what the story is about. And I don't want to overstate the normality, relatively speaking, of this organization. They were kind of syncretic. A lot of their beliefs were centered around orbital expansion. There's a reason that they were kind of obscure looking back on it. So we arrived puts me kind of in the early wave of double crossers, if you will. I had my 11th birthday shortly after we arrived, and, well, it didn't really go very well. The cult never really got off the ground in the way they wanted, and this, of course, damaged the credibility of its leaders, and they got a little bit desperate, and I was too young to know exactly what was going on, but, you know, activities moved increasingly into the basements of the station as they fell more and more into anonymity and in some cases disrepair. At some point, for some reason, we encountered what I have to believe was a dreamer. I don't have clear memories. If any of you have ever spent time in the basements, they're not very well lit unless in use. And, well, like I said, I was not a small child, but, well, and there are other complications, I guess. I don't really know what happened to the rest of the cult. The last time I saw them, the remaining members, my parents, me, a couple other families, and the leaders were in this room in the basement. And then there was a bright light and a noise that you heard with your bones rather than your ears. And the silhouette of something terrifying. And, well, when I woke up, the rest of them were gone. And something had happened to me. I don't know exactly how to explain it. I mean, it's easy to explain in the literal sense. I had a couple of minor augments. I don't really know what they were intended to do, but they were, you know, elected for by my parents. Just a little metal patch right here behind my ear, and another one sort of at the very base of my neck, the top of my spine. And when I woke up, there were more. Nothing like what I have now, but more. And I don't know how to describe it. I don't actually know how long I was out of body, but it was. And she sort of like loses focus on you and sort of just stares up into the middle distance, and like color rises to her cheeks and her expression softens, just like kind of remembering it. But she reaches for the words and she says, "It was a small eternity of euphoria, and I had the feeling waking up that I had lost not just the sensation, but crucial knowledge, that I had been told something important, something secret, something world-changing, but that my mind couldn't quite contain it. And on my best days, I find myself believing that it's still in there, and it'll reemerge when I need it. And on my worst days, I wonder if maybe it's gone forever because I just wasn't good enough to hang on to it somehow." She shakes her head a little bit as though clearing it and says, "In any case, my immediate assumption was that, well, that God had visited me, and I spent a lot of my time in various child care and foster programs, believing that if I could just touch the divine again, I could make sense of it all. But as I got older, and, well, I spent a lot of time reading, I came to believe that whatever encounter I had, it had done something to my brain that on the one hand had been, well, intensely amazing, and on the other hand,
elevated in some way. And so if manipulation of the brain can do that, it became my goal to figure out, well, how to manipulate the brain in that way. And she sort of very casually pings a nail off of some of the hardware on the back of her head and neck. She says, so I've been experimenting in various ways with augments and enhancements and things ever since. And, well, I came to the dreamer stuff a little while after I got out on my own, and reasoned that whatever it was that I saw and whatever it was that was in the basements and whatever it was that I encountered could very easily have been just such a thing, and that it was the best material explanation. Of course, a part of me would love for it to have a supernatural explanation, but at the very least, by understanding the dreamers and clearing up that mystery, I can narrow the field of possibilities and maybe find out exactly what it was that I experienced. In the meantime, she gestures at Aang, says, I try to expand my knowledge and my experiences however I can, and hopes that it will help me, explain one way or another. But that's neither here nor there. She sort of firms back up again and takes another large sip of her drink. She says, I can't find anyone else reporting an experience similar to mine, but a sort of Occam's razor reading of the situation is that I encountered something unexplained, probably technological, which, assuming that it did something to the rest of the cult, or at least its adults, then Dreamer seems to fit. But unfortunately, I haven't been able to even come up with so much as a guess or an apocryphal name for the one I encountered, if indeed that is what happened. And then she gives a nod as though satisfied with the work she has done and finishes her drink. Her lips are now very red.
I raise my opaque glass. Thank you. I appreciate you sharing what you did. I'd invite any questions from my fellows here, but I hope that perhaps we can find some answers for the both of us together.
She smiles warmly. I'd like that.
So, thanks. Like they said, it's hard when who you are is wrapped up in a mystery.
Yes.
Who want to help. So at the time you felt like it was God. And that made sense given your framework, but has anything you've seen since given you, other than the context about dreamers, you said they came from people. Do you have any idea which people?
She shakes her head. She says, my reasoning is that everything on this station came from people, unless we're willing to entertain the idea, as some do, that these are some kind of devices or probes sent by extra solar system alien presences to investigate or conquer or exterminate us or whatever, then they had to have been at some point in the chain of causality caused by people. That's how machinery occurs in all of human experience so far, anyway.
It's a safe place to start at the very least, sure. Makes sense. You said you've heard of over three. Do dreamers have families? Are the two potentially related? It's hard to even know what language to start with.
When you ask if they are potentially related and use the word family, she sort of gets a slightly stricken look and she goes, I hadn't even considered. And sort of looks at you wide-eyed with
a look somewhere between excitement and terror, and she goes, even if people made them, what if they can make more of themselves, different, not replicated? What if they're intelligent, if they're sapient enough to design new ones entirely? This could... She sort of slumps back in her chair a little bit, and she goes, this could be way bigger than anything I've seen speculated before, if that's possible.
I guess that's what I was thinking. That's what the talk about God had me thinking, right? I mean, even if God made the first people, he didn't, precisely speaking, make us. A lot of other stuff happened in between. So, I mean, if we made something that can replicate itself, can iterate on itself the way we kind of can, I mean, I don't know. I'm speculating, of course, but if we're dealing with a consciousness, consciousnesses want to make other consciousnesses, both like and unlike themselves.
She sort of nods slowly. That is something to consider. And then she starts to laugh quietly, getting louder as it continues, and she goes, my God, from a machine. She sort of shakes her head to clear it a little bit, and says, well, okay, so other than Over 3, I've heard of one that has a couple names. My favorite is the Polysome, which is like a little box with a cloud of smaller subsidiary robots around it. It, you know, is less threatening than something like Over 3, obviously, but, you know, a lot of speculation there. Something entirely ordinary, but somehow out of place. Good fodder for creepypastas. The internet's creativity being both an infinitely wide but not very deep well. Another one gets called the Worm. You'll never guess what it looks like. That one's pretty hard to pin down any consistent traits for, because it's, being used fictively at least as often as anything else. And then I've actually seen something that purports to be a photograph, though, again, who knows its veracity exactly, of one that the person who posted it called a Leaper, which, you know those, like, police robo-dog things?
Unfortunately.
Okay, so what if it had, a face made out of, like, prehensile tendrils? Kind of thing.
Terrible.
I shudder.
That's all the ones that I think definitely have some real world counterpart based on my reading. There are a lot of others. I mean, if we're counting kitbashes, I suppose I'm still a little torn on that one. Some have speculated about a purely digital dreamer, which reads to me like creative writing, but like could be possible. And a number of sort of others have talked about like marine or aquatic dreamers, which that feels fictive to me because, well, I mean, there's, you know, water features on the station, but nothing like that.
If they're a Grand Cross phenomenon, that would be unlikely.
Right. And I don't know, there's a lot of different, you know, ones that I don't think are real, largely taking after animals. You know, I had to generalize because, well, again, internet creativity. So anyway, that's the broad strokes, and you can do some reading.
As she's winding down, I will cause the group chat to have a poll. Do we invite her back to the frontispiece?
Mm, there's the three dots of me typing.
Several people are typing at once, yes.
Yes. Mine seems excessively prolonged before just mysteriously turning into a thumbs up emoji.
If there's an actual poll, a yes vote
appears. Yeah, yeah, it's an actual poll.
I don't use the actual poll, I just send the thumbs up emoji.
Of course.
That sounds correct.
Of course.
Yeah.
I think soon some initial digging just to be a little bit more cautious might be good prior. Let's vet her, then invite her.
I send a pointer finger emoji to that response, pointing up to it.
Burn, do you include Bronwy on this poll?
Yes.
She does not respond to the yes-no poll because she's not there, but she does message back. I take it things are going well, then. I leave it to you to decide, but I guess let me know if I need to... And she puts it in four sets of quotation marks. Clean up anything. And then a winky face.
I follow the chat up with, what about the idea of sending her to Caleb Dryden to ask him some questions about dreamers? That would be a way to throw Caleb off of our direct trail and perhaps get some more information while providing an additional lead for Apatia.
Too many players.
Operationally complicated. Also sort of a poor turn, like sending her to be a decoy for us.
We don't know if Caleb is safe.
True.
Keeping him off of our trail, that's a good thought, but I mean, we have multiple ways to not look like ourselves.
He already knows where we are.
Yeah,
that's that idea.
While this conversation has been going on, it hasn't taken a long time, but it's taken long enough for a little bit of quiet to set in at your table and for Apatia. Cato, how good are you at dividing your attention between these kinds of conversations and your physical environment?
I would say at a minimum he has practice.
Yeah. Sure. Whether I have a poker face might sounds like a cool role to me, but I'm used to multitasking, right? Because I'm often preparing crime while also running a bookstore.
Yeah. So as the silence, you know, sort of sets in and the patient kind of looks around and seems to surmise that, you know, a conversation is taking place, she looks Cato in your direction and sort of makes eye contact with you and gestures questioningly at your remaining burden and gestures like to reach for it, but with like a raised eyebrow.
I give her the proceed at your own risk look in response.
She smirks and pulls your glass over and drinks off about half of what's left at a go, and then slides it back in front of you and does a little lip lick that clears some of the red from her drink and looks a little satisfied and a little fuzzy.
I cheers her and down probably not as much as she managed to. So.
It taking a lot at a time is
a choice.
More intense, but again, not maybe in an unpleasant way, depending on, you know, your exact mileage.
Sure. What if a sort of a still hooch had the consistency of maple syrup is kind of what I'm picturing.
Not too far off, yeah. Okay. I would say, still hooch with some choice infusions.
Mm. We share a moment of enjoying this and knowing that most would not.
So, yeah, your side comms can wrap up as indicated, and as people's attention kind of more visibly returns to the table, you know, Apatia sort of, you know, leans forward a little bit and smiles kind of vaguely.
Well, what decision was reached? I have to say, I usually require, more than one drink and dinner before I you know, accompany anyone to a second location on a first date. And kind of chuckles at her joke.
That's a good policy, honestly. At least, you know, as a starting point.
I am starting to feel the drink, too, I assume.
Regardless of whether it is in an intoxication sense or not, you're definitely feeling something because there's a fair bit of it and it lingers in the mouth.
Sure, sure.
You were feeling the drink and also the alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's a good way of putting it.
Right. Well, I'm going to try to deceive somewhat.
Okay.
I think that our group has some information about who might have recovered this dreamer in the wake of this incident that we described. We're still tracking down some leads, but cautiously, I'd like to bring you into the loop. Perhaps we can get together tomorrow, the next day?
At a time of mutual scheduling convenience, says the mumble teen. Age inappropriately.
I look at Ing with a sharp look of approval. And it's lightly tinged by some shock. It's the same look a parent might give their child when they realize that their child is imitating them.
There's so much about this exchange to hate.
Infinite depth.
So, Apatia sort of smirks and says, "Well, I guess normally I try to make him wait a little more between a first and second date, but I am curious to see where this goes, and you're all quite pleasant company." Though she does sort of give a wry twist of the lips that seems intended for Cal.
Sorry, I had to get out of character squeeing over Apatia. And in complete candor, part of our consideration is ensuring that we don't entangle you in more than you wish to be entangled in.
One eyebrow kind of arches and she says, "Thank you for the consideration. Yeah, you know how to get in touch with me, and I know how to get in touch with you, and, you know, I would say take your time, but honestly, patience isn't my forte, so do hurry back now, and hopefully we'll have a long and productive collaboration."
I snort when she says that.
Entangle me at your leisure.
To entangle
me. I raise an eyebrow at that.
Her other eyebrow raises to match.
Adorable.
I down the rest of the drink.
If you were still purely biological, you might have coughed, but yeah.
Oh, thank God I'm not.
Yeah. Treating this as it, you know, sort of having wound down, Apatia, you know, sort of gets up from the table and kind of waves cordially at everybody. And instead of walking to the door, she walks over to the area in front of the stage as the fruits of knowledge are coming back out for the, you know, back half of their set. No costume changes have taken place exactly, but costume alterations have to be a little more risque is the wrong word, but sort of confrontational in both a gender presentation and sexuality kind of way. You know, various articles of clothing, you know, rolled up or, you know, sort of torn open or unzipped or pinned back. It does not, there's no preamble whatsoever. They come out, they sit down, and the drummer does a Ramon style, 1, 2, 3, 4, and they just start. And now conversation is essentially impossible. Apatia sort of stands just kind of bobbing her head in the middle of more enthusiastic reactions from the other half dozen or so people who have gotten up by the stage as they come back out. You are, of course, welcome to stay and enjoy the show as long as you wish to. Settle up and head out whenever you wish to. Anything you need to accomplish currently?
Paying the tab, but otherwise, I think we've done what we need to do here, yeah? Mm-hmm.
I think I'll linger a bit with the music, not for mm-hmm. the sake of, you know, saying anything additional to Apatia, mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. for the sake of, you know, if I spend all of my life trying to figure out existence and not living, then that seems short-sighted. So.
Well said. So yeah, I suppose there, you know, is the opportunity for the, you know, group to disperse asynchronously here, but perhaps the important part is, unless anyone is attempting to spend the night at the place of honor, you know,
that would be weird.
That would be pretty weird. At least absent a nuclear apocalypse, in which case it, you know, is at least
there are worse places
themed yeah. around the idea of living there. And so I suppose the question for us to be winding down on here is just, you know, what do any of our player characters do between, you know, their recommencement of the Fruits of Knowledge's set and them going to sleep?
I think I stay and listen to the music with Aang if Aang will have me.
Hell yeah.
I also stay, but I kind of hang in the outskirts and drink tonic water with lime.
I disappear as soon as my eyes are off of me.
Surprising, no one.
Yeah, those who do stay discover that while loud and abrasive, the Fruits of Knowledge have a, perhaps on reflection, unsurprising sense for kind of groove first and hooks when they want to. Their worst enemy is the acoustics of the place, just absolutely atrocious. Robin?
By the end, I am tapping my toe without realizing it.
Against your will?
Mostly that.
At the end of the set, the lead singer takes the sex toy off of their head, turns around as though tossing a bridal bouquet, and flings it, you know, backwards behind them. And the folks who are sort of proximate to the stage jockey to catch it. And the two people who each come down with a hand on it sort of each tug once and then look at each other in surprise and then leave together.
That's magnificent.
Perfect. And so, yeah, if there isn't anything else between our player characters and bedtime, then I think it is around about the right time for us to wind down. This will just have been the learn about Apatia at one of Adam's weird eateries episode.
A great which episode.
Honestly, one of my favorite kinds of episodes.
So. Yeah.
I don't think that this necessarily constitutes a session that will give us XP. Our pacing on that is just going to continue to be a little bit weird, but we'll be set up to, you know, proceed apace when we reconvene next. So that'll conclude this session of Dice Punks. Thanks for joining us. I hope our players and listeners enjoyed it as much as I did and as much as Apatia did, and that you'll join us again next time. If you're hearing us now, then you probably know where to listen to this, but we can be found almost any place one can listen to podcasts, as well as on the wider web at dicepunks.com and on Tumblr and Blue Sky as at dicepunks. With that, I think we're ready to say farewell, so say goodbye to the kind folks back on Earth, players.
Thanks for listening, and remember, always select your burdens carefully.
Thank you for listening, everyone. Life is a game of poker. Even if you don't like the cards you've been dealt, you can sure bluff your way into a better hand.
Thanks for listening, folks. And if you're going to talk about someone in front of them, be subtle about it.
Well, thank you for listening. And you know what? Go ahead. Try me, punk. I think you'll like me.
I think so, too.
Aww.
And as the poet once said, no pain has purpose, no one above to judge us. Beloved listeners, thank you for tuning in. Stick around through the admin stuff for an invocation. The music in this episode, Augment or Die, is by Emerson Boatwright and our very own bookmonger, Drew. Check out their other work at the link in the show notes. Editing and our rad new cover art was done by Joanne, who's appeared in podcasts now and again. Check out her work around the internet where she goes by Anything Sews. Site design and graphics for DicePunks.com are by the one and only Officer Armitage, Robin. Hardwired Island is by Paul Michevic, Freya Erlingsdotter, and Minerva McJonda, and you can find Hardwired Island at etten.itch.io/hardwiredisland. Links to the system and authors can be found in the Punk Grimoire section of our website, DicePunks.com. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked what you heard, that's reward enough on its own, but if you're so inclined, you can help us out by rating and reviewing us wherever you listen to us, telling your friends who you think would like us to give us a listen, even by heading over to our Patreon at patreon.com/dicepunks. We have fun rewards available to backers, including a patron-only Discord and access to the Dice Peaks After Show for episodes 1.1 and following. Regardless, we hope you'll tune in again, and until then, remember, subtlety is for cowards.
Defragging is my least favorite part of the night by far. I've tried skipping it for days on end, even made it a week once, but sooner or later, I need to sift and consolidate. Trouble is, everything in the neural net has to be chunked and sorted according to its relationship with everything else. Nothing for it, though. Electric sheep and all that, so here we go. Kaido's arm around Burn's shoulders. The steam rising gently off a teacup into the evening air. The feeling of a skull suddenly giving way into reddish pink gore as my hand clamps shut. The final, exacting placement of a sequined eye. I smile. A little mustache would go nicely, I think. A child weeps inconsolably and hammers away at my titanium frame with tiny, ineffectual fists. New combatant detected. Cal steps protectively but surreptitiously in front of Banjo, hoping that no one will notice. I notice. The dreamer, bound in chains and entombed in its Faraday cage. Prolix stalks a mouse, chattering the hallway. It has been heretofore injudiciously acquainted them under varying circumstances. A great silence tests the thesis that your theorem would unleash. The profound thunder of blood soaks deeply and indelibly into the soul, leaving flesh where a mind once danced. Void, 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 3141592653. My eyes click open. I would gasp if I had lungs. I would weep if I had tears. I would scream if I had any right to. Instead, I start my day.